This is the GM Authority Debate, Episode 5 for March 4th, 2010, Cadillac and Beyond. The GM Authority Debate is brought to you by the GM Authority News Desk for the latest independent General Motors news, analysis, and a whole lot more. Visit GMAuthority.com. You can subscribe to this podcast for free. Try searching for GM Authority Debate in the iTunes Store. It's time for the GM Authority Debate. This is the show where we fight and we debate and we argue the General Motors topics that matter the most. And Hilton Jorsen's here from Ontario, Canada. Hey, Hilton.
Hi, Alex.
Good to be here today. You're from the womb of the fifth generation Chevy Camaro.
I am.
Is that fair to say?
Sure. I'm anything Camaro, you can ask me.
And that's of course because the Camaro is produced somewhere near, or is it near or not near where you are?
No, I'm not. Well, I don't know. It's relative. I'm about three hours from the plant.
Okay.
So that's closer. Not far.
Closer compared to compared to me.
Absolutely.
I wonder how long it would take to drive from South Florida over to, is it Oshawa?
Yeah, 24 hours.
Hmm. I wonder if I can do it all in one charge with a Chevy Volt. That would be interesting.
That's the goal of General Motors right now.
That is. Hopefully they'll be able to achieve it, but they're having all these very, very, very interesting competitors prop up here and there. You know the Nissan Leaf?
Yeah.
I've been reading about this, doing some research. That's a very interesting vehicle. It's all electric. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's kind of like, from what I'm feeling right now on the web, the Leaf is really picking up some steam. I don't know whether that's due to Nissan's marketing or social media strategy or their efforts in that area. But to me, it seems that the Volt is a little bit confusing to people.
Yeah, well, with the Leaf, I think Nissan is they got the gloves on, and and as far as the consumer's concerned, you know, it's all good because, you know, anytime you have multiple competitors into the market, we end up benefiting from it. So
absolutely.
I know, like you said, the social media thing with Nissan is off and running, and you know, I believe that their pre-ordering system for the Leaf is already available and running. So
yep.
they're going.
I think they said that they have 50,000. Well, these are 50,000 people who put their name down on a list that didn't cost anything.
Yeah.
But it's still 50,000. 50,000 names.
It's 50,000, and that's 50,000 people that you can market to over the next year or two.
Exactly. And this is coming in the same time frame of with the Volt, I think. They're going to release it in the end of 2010, they're saying.
Yeah.
So that'll be very interesting from a consumer standpoint. I don't know how interesting that will be for General Motors.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Now, from sunny South Florida, of course, I'm Alex Luft, and let's get to the topic of the debate of the week, which is not the Chevy Volt or the Nissan Leaf. This week, we're going to talk about Cadillac, and there's not really a specific topic. We're just going to Cadillac it out.
Sure.
I think go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, it kind of touches the Volt thing. We're going to talk a little bit about the Converge concept vehicle, mm-hmm. and talk about the ATS, the CTS, the XTS, and the 16. So
yep.
Really take a look at, see where Cadillac is headed.
Alrighty.
In the next few years.
So without further ado, let's ring the bell and we'll get to the debate. Oh, I forgot to turn up my little volume here. This should be better. That blew up everybody's eardrums out. Definitely did.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the most recent news. We just heard this week that the Caddy Converge, the plans for any kind of converginess, was put on the shelf and shelved and not to be resurrected again. And this wasn't really confirmed by GM, was it?
Yeah, I believe it was. It was finally confirmed that
okay.
there's just There was just no strong business case going forward for it. And, I didn't even see what they were figuring they would be able to come to market, what would they be able to come to market price-wise, for this vehicle. But, when you look at the, essentially, for those who don't know, it was Cadillac's version of the Volt. I mean, it had fantastic styling. It was a two-door coupe, but it had the technology of the Volt. And, the thing about it was, they determined that, sales of this vehicle would probably not be that great. And, possibly, the focus should be on the Volt, because, it's a four-door vehicle. You're going to get more sales.
Yeah, it's a much more mass market vehicle. You're kind of people who would buy the Volt, I'm thinking in terms of just marketing in general, would be those who have families, and it would be just a very good, very practical, and very green family vehicle. Whereas the Converge just kind of didn't make much sense in that regard, because you wouldn't buy it, as it's just not, there isn't a big enough market, a possible market for it.
Yeah, not at this point in time. I think once they, get the green technology perfected, and there's a higher demand for FEV vehicles, then revisit the possibility of bringing out a vehicle like this.
And I,
But
the thing that
go ahead.
really, the thing that really was interesting to me is that let's say we look down 10, 15, 20 years down the road, and let's say that electrification and this kind of direction that the Volt is headed in is the way to go, and is the way of the future. I think it would be pretty safe to assume that by that time we would have most of the vehicles on the road, be electric something, whether it's hybrid electric or pure electric. That's a different story. But if we look 10, 20, years down the road, we would see that then there would be a case for something like the Converge. Obviously you'd have an electric vehicle, whether it's a plug-in hybrid or whatever. You'll be able to probably to get it in all shapes and sizes: wagon, coupe, SUV, CUV, pickup truck, airplane. I don't know what other form factor there is, but that's when I think it would make sense. Not right now. Now when the market is, you need all kinds of mass market forces behind it, and the Converge, just as awesome of a vehicle as it looked to be, just didn't have it, unfortunately.
And that's the thing about the Converge itself. You mentioned about the looks of it. Even though the concept was really about bringing electric, a pure, true electric vehicle to the luxury brand, the car styling was, I mean, stunning. I think that the look of this car is absolutely fantastic. It's one of the nicer stylings I've ever seen come out of Cadillac in well over 20 years, except for maybe the 16, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And and for that reason alone, it's just a shame that this vehicle cannot come to market in some other way. Now, I know that the platform that the Converge was under was the E-Flex platform, which was essentially a front-wheel drive platform. And looking at the styling of this car, and I think we have a few great pictures on GMAuthority.com site. It's just fantastic. And what I would like to see is this style come to market, but as a four-door, and perhaps with the EcoTec 4 or the V6 DI, and be a true 3 Series BMW fighter. Now, I know that they're looking at, they've got an ATS coming out next year. It's a small entry-level Cadillac. It's going to be their 3 Series fighter, but to me, just doesn't have the style that is needed to put Cadillac back up at the top.
The ATS would be very interesting in terms of its positioning at first, because it will be a it will compete with the 3 Series, with the C class, you know, with that compact luxury class, A4, Lexus IS, Acura TSX, maybe even Infiniti G to a certain extent, although the G is a little bit bigger, quite a bit bigger actually. But the it will be interesting what how the direction that GM takes there, because they have the CTS, which is has been positioned for ever since its existence as a compact competitor, as a competitor to the 3 Series, as a competitor to the C-Class. You know, that's what all the studies, all of the car mag comparos have been have pitted it against, the 3 Series. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. now all of a sudden they're going to have an ATS, which is a true 3 Series competitor. The CTS is quite a bit bigger, actually, than the 3 Series. It's almost 10 inches longer. And the reason we the reason I'm talking about 3 Series, obviously, I think the Lexus IS is also a very strong seller in the market. And whenever I say 3 Series, I just mean compact luxury segment. But it'll be very interesting to see how GM positions it there, because they don't want to confuse the CTS buyer, and at the same time they want to introduce this new product. It'll be very interesting to see what kind of marketing, what kind of communications, and what the dealer message will be for the ATS. And I haven't seen that car personally. We've seen spy shots here and there, and it's been very, very scarily and very well camouflaged to make it look, in my opinion, very unappealing. It looks like from the spy pics that we have on the site right now, it looks very, the trunk lid, for example, looks like it's not even a trunk. It looks like it's a hatch.
Yeah, I agree. It looks like the, you know, the 1985 Toyota Corolla four-door hatchback. I don't know if you remember that.
That's a perfect example, actually.
Yeah.
That's exactly how it looks like, with just an added set of doors.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't know how that design is going to appeal to, you know, those who are also in the market for a 3 Series BMW or a C-Class Mercedes-Benz. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have to look at, you know, I mean, let's take a step back here and look at Cadillac as a brand. You know, back in the 50s and 60s, this was the brand that everybody worked towards. Mm-hmm. And if you had a Cadillac in your driveway, you were envy of the entire neighborhood. I mean, people wanted to be you.
Yep.
It was the ultimate status symbol in America. And now, you know what? I hate to say it, but Mercedes-Benz owns that. And I know in my world and a lot of my friends' worlds, when you've made it in the world, you know, you or your wife is driving a Mercedes-Benz. That's just right. How it is.
Yep.
And Cadillac has to get back to being that car. When you made it, you need to buy a Cadillac. And you show the world that, you know, you're driving one of the best vehicles out there.
Yeah, exactly.
And
go ahead.
Well, I think, you know, based on the products that Cadillac has now and the products that are coming out in the next year or two, they're not going to get there. You know, right now, I believe last year they sold just a little bit over 40,000 units.
Yep.
I mean, this is the entire brand. Mm-hmm. We're talking Cadillac sold 40,000 units. Well, they just announced this week that, you know, the 100,000th Camaro was built. And, you know, that hasn't been even going 12 months yet. So they sell, you know, over 100,000 Chevy Impalas every year. And, you know, that's an old design. So it's far from being successful. I mean, you can look at all the flashy marketing on it. You can look at, you know, the great CTS Vs, the V-Class Cadillac. I mean, the engineering there is fantastic. But at the end of the day, they're selling 40,000. And compare that with BMW, who sells, and I'm taking out the mini sales here.
Yeah.
BMW sells over 200,000 units in North America alone.
And
So
I don't even get me started on where Lexus stands there, because Lexus beats BMW, has beat BMW over the last, it's been the top luxury car maker in the US for the last, I think it was over 10 years plus. So it's actually, I have an ad here from, I think you'll remember this one. It's the Cadillac Moments ad. Let me just play it, and I think it will reinforce your point perfectly. And this is, I think this is exactly where Cadillac wants to be, but unfortunately isn't right now. It's got a little bit of music to it. It's a minute long, but it's I think it underlines a point perfectly. Here it is.
Okay.
Every American who ever had a dream dreamed of driving a Cadillac. From this moment on. It's time to start dreaming again.
And the rest of it just kind of goes into this musical, beautiful musical melody demonstrating. I think it was from 2006 or maybe 2007. But it exactly underlines your point. Cadillac wants to be there. Unfortunately, it's not.
And, I mean, that ad is correct, but it's time to start dreaming about that again. The problem with that ad is that it was directed to the consumer. Well, it should be directed to management at Cadillac. That's really what we need to be doing right now. And, to think that you're going to get back there on the next ATS, the current CTS, which I like, by the way, and the upcoming XTS. It's not going to happen.
No.
So
the thing that obviously we know that the CTS is going to be bigger than the current gen. The next generation CTS is going to be bigger than the current generation. I think basically it's the CTS is going to move up market to become a 5 series. The ATS is going to be a 3 series. But the XTS is going to be the 7 series now, or we can say, of course, Mercedes S-Class, Audi A8, Lexus LS. Let's see who else is in there that I've missed.
BMW 7 series.
Yeah, the 7 series. I think that's pretty much it. I think Acura can't really count because the RL is, it's kind of in this in-between segment that doesn't really count.
That's Buick.
Buick is, I think the LaCrosse can go very well against it, even against the RL, even though it's priced well underneath where the RL starts. But the thing, let's look at the high end for a second and look at the XTS. And obviously we saw it at the Detroit show just 2 months ago, and to me it looked great. It was it was kind of this mysterious product before we saw the concept. It was this mysterious product. Everybody was really wondering how would they pull this off? Because we knew it was going to be on the Super Epsilon platform, which of course starts out as a front-wheel drive platform, and then the XTS is in concept form. It's an all-wheel drive car. But everybody was wondering, how will they pull this off? How will they make a huge, or a really true, full luxury flagship sedan? How will they make it based on a front-wheel drive platform? How will they pull that off? And I think they've pulled it off fairly well from a design standpoint, proportion-wise. I think it looks very good. It's very appealing. It's the styling is gorgeous to me. What do you think of the styling?
Well, I like everything about it in terms of the interior, the features of it, the quality in it, the technology, and the engineering. But as far as the styling, I mean, I do like it, but it is not the 16 concept car. It doesn't even come close to that car. To me, it looks like the XTS looks like a warmed over 2008 DTS. I mean, I would expect that this upcoming XTS to be the next DTS style. And you know what? It's okay. I mean, it's nice, but the style of it is not good enough for people to want to buy it to show off. And, you know, people say, well, why would I buy a car to show off? Well, it goes back to the old days about wanting to have the ultimate status symbol in your driveway.
Right.
And, you know, when you're talking about luxury, and you know, you can call somebody shallow, but we really are talking about status in
Right.
your community. This is something that has gone since the beginning of time during the caveman days. Status meant something, and it still means something today. And that is where Cadillac has to focus its attention on. It has to get to the point where people will want to be in a Cadillac because it's the ultimate status symbol. And right now, with the designs and the styling that's coming out versus the designs and stylings that they had said no to, they're just not going to do it. And you know, I want people to come out onto our site and take a look at the Cadillac 16 concept car. It is a fantastic vehicle. It is something that nothing Mercedes, nothing BMW makes would even compare to. And I'm not exaggerating here. This car is unbelievably beautiful. It's a design that we haven't seen from anybody before. It's not, you know, take something and, you know, add a line here, drop a line there. It is its own beast. And you know what? It pays a tribute to older Cadillacs of the past. I mean, the back of the car is right out of a 1967 Cadillac Eldorado. It's a even though this vehicle is a four-door vehicle, it's got a business-like coupe look to it. It's very muscular looking. It's very impressive. It has presence on the road, which is very important to successful people. It's not gaudy. It's not ostentatious. It's a fantastic vehicle, and you know, I'm so disappointed that they decided to go with the Epsilon based XTS.
Yeah, the 16 is it's like when I was a kid, and I guess I kind of fall in the X generation of or maybe even the Y, depends on which way you look at it. But when I was a little kid and I was watching these movies, little cartoons of the 101 Dalmatians, there was that's what it's called, right? The 101 Dalmatians. I was so impressed when the evil witch of this film, the cartoon, drove her. I don't know what kind of car it was, but to me, the 16 is this same exact car out of that movie, and it's amazing. It has this huge long hood. It's like I mean, you want to talk about a three box profile. This redesigns the entire thing.
Yeah, and you know, it had that very long hood from, you know, the 1930s brass cars, for example. And you know, Cadillac was, you know, one of the first companies to come out with V12 engines, V16 engines, and so that look that you speak of is really Cadillac. And the 16 did pay tribute to that. It was just a fantastic, fantastic design. And you know, I know, I understand the decisions around why they decided to go with an XTS, you know, starting out with an Epsilon platform, but because basically they're going to make more money off of each unit they sell. But the problem is that you're not going to sell too many units. I
Right.
mean, that is the whole issue. Now, you can, you know, I mean, if and you know, I wish Kurt McNeil all the best in his new position at Cadillac, but he's going to have it tough. If you have to go after BMW, who sells five times as many cars in North America as you, and with those designs that you have coming, I don't know how he's going to do it, to be honest.
The I think what and I think what you're actually referring to is the ability of Cadillac and for Cadillac to once again become the status symbol that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
What it needs to do is it doesn't just need to be competitive. It doesn't need to have good enough design. I think the XTS is a great design, but I think it's not enough to be able to go out and say, we're going to take, you see that person who's driving the BMW 7 Series over there that they paid $80,000 for. When somebody parks their XTS or the XTS drives by on the road next to that person who's driving the 7 Series, they won't look at it and say, wow, now why did I buy my 7 Series and not that? That's what Cadillac needs to do in order to turn their entire ship around.
I totally agree with that. And, you know, the other thing, too, is the intrinsic value that Cadillac brings to General Motors in general. You know, if you're telling the world that you've changed and you're going to be the best car company out there, then your flagship division better literally be the best car company out there. And that means exceptional design, exceptional engineering, exceptional styling, cutting edge styling. And if you have to spend some bucks on some new type of platform, you do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's all there is to it. If you're going to end up, reusing, basically the new Buick LaCrosse and stripping it down and making it look like a Cadillac, you're not going to be at the top.
The thing that's interesting, I think, going back a little bit to when you mentioned that they're making some modifications to the reason that they put the XTS on the Epsilon in the first place was to, you know, obviously economies of scale, they need to be able to make it work financially.
Yeah.
They don't sell that many of these things compared to, you know, a volume luxury car like a 3 Series or what will be their XT or what will be their ATS.
Yeah.
But at the same time, my question is, why did they choose the Epsilon? They have another working, you know, perfectly modern rear wheel drive platform in the Sigma that currently underpins the CTS and the STS that's going to be no longer for this world in the next few years. Why couldn't they take the Sigma, stretch it? You know, the STS is already 196, I believe, inches long. How long is the XTS? It's about 202. I think they could have stretched that to a point, to the length they needed to with the XTS, used it. Mm-hmm. It could have been a proper rear-wheel drive platform. Because here's the message that it sends, at least to me. My whole theory with Cadillac is, besides it being a status symbol, besides it being, the thing that the luxury vehicle, luxury brand that people aspire to drive, it to me there is this kind of divergent divide between the luxury car market. On one hand, we have brands like BMW and Audi, and some to a certain extent, Infiniti. These brands, they're really focused on performance. They have rear-wheel drive-based vehicles. You know, maybe they have all-wheel drive, but the vehicles always start off on a rear-wheel drive platform. The all-wheel drive is an option. They handle, they corner exceptionally well. They have exceptionally styled interiors. And on the other hand, we have other brands that are kind of this pure luxury aspect of the luxury world, which is Lexus, Mercedes, more to this extent here on this side, and I think I don't know where we would put Acura in that, but Acura isn't really here nor there because they're just rebadged Hondas, and they really are. You know, you look at the TSX is a Honda Accord, the TL is that, even the RL is a Honda something in Japan, so that doesn't really count because they're. They don't have a strategy. They're just trying to milk their Honda vehicles for all they can. But for the brands that are global, the global luxury brands, and even Infiniti, it doesn't fall into that because those are Nissans from Japan also. So on one hand, you have pure luxury like Lexus and Mercedes. And on the other hand, you have BMW and Audi that are performance luxury. And to me, right now, Cadillac has seemed to be taking this direction of going after BMW, going after the and Audi, going after the performance luxury segment, where they're going to have rear-wheel drive cars where they're going to be going after, where they're going to be catering to the driving luxury enthusiast who also wants to be able to drive their luxury vehicle, you know, hard around corners, who wants to push it, who wants to maybe hear some of the more retuned and attuned engine notes. And you know, the CTS, it's a rear-wheel drive vehicle. The ATS that's coming, you know, GM made the decision to put it on a rear-wheel drive alpha platform. They could have decided to put it onto and share the platform with the Astra and put it on the the Delta. So it seemed to me like Cadillac was going in the direction and establishing themselves as a very credible player in the performance luxury segment with BMW and Audi. And all of a sudden we get the XTS, which is it kind of throws a monkey wrench at the whole thing and says, well, instead of now going after this performance luxury segment, we're going to start off with a soapbox platform that's a front-wheel drive based platform. We're going to slap on, you know, we're going to put the drivetrain back to the rear wheels and also, you know, call it all-wheel drive, and we'll call it our full-size luxury sedan. That, to me, it's bad strategy incarnate. It's it confuses. Maybe I'm the only one who looks at it like this, but if I were a consumer looking at, and I drove the CTS, and you know all these things, how the brands hope that you'll do this is, you know, you graduate college, you purchase your Chevy, and then you get your, you know, first promotion, maybe you spring for the ATS, and then you get your other promotion 10 years down the road, you get the CTS, and then by the time you're a super high-ranking executive, you know, who's king of the castle, then you get your 70 or 80 or $100,000 XTS. And so once this person, this customer has gone through the ATS, once they've gone through the CTS, which are both rear-wheel drive vehicles and more performance-oriented, then you get the XTS, and what do you get? You get a completely different experience. You get a boat of a car, basically. You get a car that the same way that the DeVille is, or the DTS. It's a boat on wheels that floats around and doesn't corner well, and it's a boat.
Are you saying that you get a 1985 Cadillac?
Exactly. That's exactly what you get.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right. Like, it just doesn't follow through, rather. You know, when we're looking at Chevrolet, it looks like they're moving towards, value, their reliability, quality, gas mileage, and, you know, the first, like you said, it's the first vehicle that people are going to consider. If you're going to buy your kid a vehicle, their first vehicle, then, you know, go to Chevrolet, because we're going to have something that's perfect for them.
Yep.
If you are somebody on a budget, go to Chevrolet, because we have something for you. And maybe if you want to splurge a little bit, well, Chevrolet still has something with some luxury features. And when you're looking at Buick, you know, I think they've done a really good job sort of positioning it as a possible Lexus competitor. It is semi-sporty, but the styling, the quality, the luxury is certainly there with those vehicles. But with Cadillac, it's just like you said, you can start off in something that may have that European feel, but at the end of the day, you get to the XTS and, you know, you're riding a couch on wheels.
Right.
So, whereas compared to, a 7 Series BMW, it still feels sporty, and it still, I don't know if you've ever experienced high speed in a 7 Series BMW, but let me tell you, it feels fine.
No,
so,
it feels beautiful, and you can still see that the interesting thing is that you can still corner your 7 Series BMW, even though it's a full-size, you know, huge sedan. You can still corner it, take it around the corner as fast and at the same speed as you can your 3 Series that you started off with 20, 30 years ago when you first got your first promotion. And
It's natural progression.
right, exactly. And the XTS breaks that. It says, and I think what the reason, one of the reasons why GM may have done this with the XTS this time around is, and actually now that I think of it, it may make sense, but it's still messed up. I think what the GM tried to do was they tried to compromise, and they said, okay, well, we're going to kill. Obviously, the XTS is going to replace the STS and the DTS at the same time. So they said, well, we're gonna since we're killing these two cars, and they're kind of two different markets, right? The STS is rear-wheel drive. It's the performance version of you know, bigger, just a bigger version of the performance CTS. And the DTS is, well, we all know what that is, couch and wheels. So I think what they
and
tried...
And very popular in Florida by...
Oh, don't even get me started on that. don't even go there. In fact, I actually had a nice little run-in with one of those today when I was pulling out of my university. My university just hired a new dean or a new president, and there was a whole parade, and there were like 15 billion of these DTSs and Lexus ES vehicles all over the school. Oh, and we had a nice little run-in with one of those. They almost hit us, but by making two vehicles go away with the XTS or with the STS and the DTS, they said maybe we can kind of compromise a little bit and say the XTS will still serve the people who, you know, maybe the DTS owner, their lease or they want is expired or they want to go and trade in their DTS and upgrade, and all of a sudden they find a performance version of the, you know, there's nothing in the Caddy lineup for them, and all of a sudden now they have to go and have to go somewhere else because maybe if they would have based it on a rear-wheel drive platform, it would have been too aggressive. It would have been too much. Maybe that's the case. So maybe they're going to compromise for this generation, and then for the next gen, they will make it a true Cadillac, in my opinion, which is make it rear-wheel drive, make it fall in line with the rest of the Caddy lineup. I don't know.
Well, I'm just thinking that, you know, everybody working at General Motors right now has zero time to get it right. And, especially this last week when, you know, Ed Whitaker reiterated the importance of getting things out to market quickly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, changing the perception of General Motors and hence the perception of these brands. And with that XTS, I just think it's more of the same old when we're looking at the DTS. Now, like I said before, I like everything about it, engineering-wise and interior-wise and that sort of thing. Platform and design, I don't think there's anything there that would suggest to me that they're going to be selling better than their competition. Let me ask you this question. If you were in a shopping mall parking lot and one of these XTSs was parked in a row of cars, front forward, would you take notice? Or would you think that's, oh, there's another CTS there?
It would probably, well, I mean, I would notice it, but I'm sure that let's say someone like my girlfriend who the most she knows about cars is here's the key, here's the steering wheel, here's the drive, all right, let's go there, let's go forward. I think she would say this is just another CTS because she's actually familiar with that because I've taught her well. But I'm sure she would say, well, this is what is this? It's a CTS, just with a different grill.
Yeah. Well, would she now, even though she's not that she doesn't know cars that well, when she sees a driving design or style coming at her, does she take notice? Like, did she notice when the first Camaro drove by?
Oh, she is in love. She's in love with the Camaro. That's her dream car. And her dream car is the yellow, the Bumblebee, basically.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, of course, she noticed that right away. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, see, that's the thing. That's where I think Cadillac has to go. It has to go to the point where they are going to come out with designs that people who aren't car enthusiasts, people who aren't car buffs, are going to immediately pay attention to. If they see that Cadillac 16, if you saw that Cadillac 16 parked at a golf course, I guarantee you people are going to look at that over anything Mercedes or anything BMW has over there. And the same thing with that Converge. I mean, I would rather see that Converge over the Alpha platform with an extra set of doors in the back.
Right.
And I think we have an article coming out talking about Cadillac in general.
Yep.
And I think our readers will be able to see what that kind of car exactly looks like. And I'm telling you, for a four-door, it would be unbelievable. And I am convinced that that car would steal sales away from BMW,
Yep.
the 3 Series. Because that 3 Series and as you said, the Lexus, they're in the North American market, and they got a foothold in here. And Cadillac has to come to market with something that they are sure is going to sell more than either of those two companies.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think we're agreeing here more than debating. What's going on? I don't know.
And with the CTS, you mentioned previously that it's going to grow in size, and that's probably a good thing. It would be good for consumers to really understand that Cadillac has three different sized vehicles in three different market segments in the luxury world, and they can easily differentiate or cross shop those three vehicles to the three Mercedes vehicles and the three BMW vehicles.
Right.
I wouldn't care well, Audi as well, but anything else, I think Cadillac should be just setting its sights on the Germans, and that's it.
Yeah. And I think Lexus also, because they over the last 10 years, Lexus has been able to, they've come they came from nothing. They came from introducing the, I don't even know what that thing was, the ES250 15 years ago or so, to where they are now, which is, well, they have the luxury market in their hands. They beat BMW, they beat Mercedes. They every single month you look at the sales numbers for the US, and they are constantly number one. They're constantly number one in reliability. They're constantly number one in, well, maybe not lately, but they're at the top of the JD Power dealer studies. It's but if we take a step back here, and I just want to quickly go back to an overarching strategy, and this isn't as much it relates to. Whoa, what happened there? I think my headphones died. Because I can't hear anything. So give me one second. I'll
Still?
switch these out
Okay.
as I roll over here in my chair and get my other headphones. This is the problem with using these types of battery-powered headphones. If you don't charge the battery, you're going to be out of luck. Let me see here. How about now? Can I hear anything now?
Can you?
Yeah, I can.
Okay.
Yeah, my battery died in my Bose headphones. All of a sudden, it's kind of like I'm hearing myself. It's going fine. And then poof, it's like that movie, that blackout movie, Flashpoint. I don't
Oh,
know
yeah.
the series. I forgot what it's called. The thing what I was going to say is, if you look at the overarching strategy that GM has with all of its brands. And I think we can set Chevy and GMC out of this one, because it's obvious what the strategy is with Chevrolet. That's the mainstream brand. It's going to compete against things like Toyota, Hyundai, Honda, and Ford, and so forth. So Chevrolet is easy. That's kind of the mainstream market, the mainstream brand, with mainstream price, reliable, etc. Then we look at GMC, and I put up an article about this a couple of weeks ago. GMC to me is basically Chevrolet trucks, Chevrolet CUVs and SUVs, just with a little bit of a different styling. And maybe it's a little bit more premium, not really. But it's for the people like myself who, personally, I would not buy, if I were in the market for a compact crossover, I would not buy the Equinox. And the reason I wouldn't buy it is that the Equinox, as excellent vehicle as it is, it seems a little bit too flowy for my taste. It's a little bit too feminine.
Okay.
And I think GMC is going to be that brand that where GM positions them to be the CUV or the SUV brand for someone who wants different styling compared to the Chevrolet counterparts. And the reason that I think the GMC brand was so profitable in the first place is because they're just, you know, they use the same platform. You know, before even the Terrain was introduced or the Acadia, you had the Yukon and the Sierra that are the same exact vehicles as the Tahoe, Suburban, and Silverado.
Yeah.
So, but now you have the all the Acadia and the Terrain, which are, they share the platforms with the Traverse and the Equinox. So GMC is a little bit more complex than Chevrolet. It's a little bit, I think, less volume for me, but it still caters to a different taste that prefers more a little bit different styling that's more masculine. Mm-hmm. So then we have Buick and Cadillac. These are the brands that are left in North America. And Cadillac, you know, we've been discussing it for the last hour or so, and I think GM has a very interesting opportunity, and we talked about this on our first debate with Manoli, our first debate show, if you'd like to listen to it and go back, and we've spent about an hour and a half debating this topic. But to me, GM has a very interesting opportunity, a very unique opportunity, because for as long as GM has been going through its tough period and bankruptcy most recently, everybody has been kind of looking at GM's plethora of brands as a liability, as this kind of negative point. Well, I think with Buick and Cadillac, what GM has is a very unique opportunity. They can own the luxury car market with Buick and Cadillac. And my proposition for that, this is my personal opinion that I've been fighting for as a GM fan, is to have Buick cater to the pure luxury segment. And it has to go up market for that. While the Cadillac vehicles, they will cater to the performance luxury segment. So while Cadillac would be BMW and Audi competitors, Buick will be a Lexus competitor directly. And I'd like to get some of your opinions, your opinion on that, because to me, it makes sense. It's a perfect strategy. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I think that the only caveat I would state in that concept is that where do you put Mercedes-Benz? And it goes back to that original, what was Cadillac in the 50s and 60s to Americans? And, you know, when you have made it in the world, what vehicle are you going to go out and want to purchase? So if Buick is that pure luxury brand and it goes after Lexus, mm-hmm. and does it go after Cadillac too? Or sorry, Mercedes-Benz too? I don't know.
But yeah, it's kind of a little bit of both, because personally to me, I think here's the way I've been following Mercedes, and I'm actually a very avid Mercedes enthusiast as well. I fell in love with the two generations ago with the 194, the E-Class. That was the first mm-hmm. German car I've ever been driven in. And it's interior proportions. I fell in love with the interior first. And then I looked at the car and I just loved it. It's the first E-Class with the two eyes. Mm-hmm. But Mercedes has been kind of an interesting brand lately, because they started going into this kind of sport mode and making their vehicles a little bit more sporty with the last generation of their products. And then for this new generation, for the new S-Class, for the new E-Class that just came out, with the new C-Class, they've taken a step back, and they've rolled the performance aspect back a little, Of course, I'm not talking about the AMG versions of the cars. I'm just talking about the regular versions. But you can feel it. If you drive the last generation C-Class and you drive the current gen C-Class, the new C-Class is softer. It's a little bit more it's a little bit more couchish, you know, if I can use that as a word. Same thing with the E-Class. It's a little bit more, it's a little softer. It's a little bit more kind of on a Lexus scale as opposed to a BMW feel and ride and feel. So,
yeah, it's I think it's going back to the ride comfort that Mercedes-Benz had 20 years ago. Like in 1990, if you drove a Mercedes-Benz, it had a taut suspension, but you know it didn't. You know, you wouldn't feel it in your back. The thing, you know, it was just a nice, quiet, smooth ride that would swallow up bumps, but at the same token, it would still be able to corner well and very good handling on the highway.
Right. Yeah. I think my proposal, what it really comes down to, and maybe this is just my personal schooling, but I've been taught over and over and over again in my not so much my marketing classes, but I've been reading a lot of these interesting marketing books and perception books, and the thing that I've really come away with is that a brand, if you look at a brand as a company, a brand needs to do one thing very, very well. It needs to be known for doing one thing extremely well. And if it can't do that one thing well, if it tries to do too many things at once, it becomes diluted and it becomes just too much. It kind of loses that image of being the, and then insert your word here. So, you know, if you look at you look at the CTS-V, you can say that that is the performance sedan, luxury performance sedan to buy, you know. And in that regard, that's why I think it would be best if GM literally just split up the luxury car market. Buick on the one hand, Cadillac on the other. And Buick would go after, you know, they would compete in certain segments, but obviously they're both luxury cars. And my proposal calls for raising the price of, and raising the image, raising the status of a Buick vehicle. You know, we can't have the LaCrosse starting at $27,000 anymore. Is that what it starts at? About 27, I believe.
Yeah, possibly.
I think it's, yeah, I just pulled it up. It's 27. It's basically 27 on the dot for the CX version. I say no more of that. You have to elevate Buick. It will take time. It will take money. But GM needs to kind of, in my proposal, they need to go up and make it a more prestige, make it a more premium brand. And if we look at all the other brands, let's say we look at Acura, and Acura seems to be this kind of luxury brand that's in between, right? Or maybe we should look at Volvo. I think Volvo should be a better example because, like we said before, Acura is, they're just rebadged Hondas. So if we look at Volvo, they're kind of this in-between brand that's not really luxury and they're not really mainstream. They're right in between something like a Mercedes and something like a Chevrolet. And this is reflected in their price, and it's also reflected in their overall quality of product. So I think that market, that in-between market, is slowly dying off because now that, I don't know if it's Geely or Geely, they've purchased Volvo from Ford, they're going to go up market with this brand. They're going to make a true 7 Series competitor under the Volvo brand. And the same thing holds true with Infiniti. They're going to have eventually a model that's above their M series. And the same thing for Acura. The next generation RL is going to grow in size, is going to be a true 7 Series S-Class competitor. So in my opinion, this kind of segment where Buick is competing in right now, this kind of in-between, I'm really kind of not really luxury and not really mainstream, kind of right in between the two, I think it's dying off. And that's what that's what I'd like to see Buick do. Now, the other thing that I'd like to see them do, and this is obviously GM in general, is to take the dealer bodies. And this is going to be, you know, this may seem outrageous at first, because there are all kinds of laws and contracts involved and cases here and business scenarios. But hear me out here and just let me know what you think.
All right.
I would like to see Buick and Cadillac dealerships be combined under one roof. I don't know what will happen to GMC. I think GMC may be moved or could be moved to be combined with Chevy dealers and into those stores. But the reason that I think this would be beneficial for GM is, mm-hmm. let's say a customer walks in who's trading in their BMW 5 Series, right? They're looking to trade in to replace their 5 Series BMW. Mm-hmm. And the BMW is obviously on the more performance edge of the scale, of luxury scale, right? So they walk in there and they say, well, okay, sir, what kind of vehicle do you prefer? Would you like a bit more sport, or do you want pure luxury and comfort? And by having Buick, which is the pure luxury, and then you have Cadillac, the performance luxury, they would be able to ask that question right at the door. And they will be able to direct that person to one brand, to Cadillac. Mm. And then let's say somebody walks in with a Lexus ES, and they're looking for a replacement for the Lexus ES, which is obviously a little bit more or a lot more on the pure luxury side. It's not a 5 Series by any stretch of the imagination, even though it's the same size. And when that person walks in into this combined Buick and Cadillac store, and they ask, hey, okay, sir, what kind of vehicle are you looking for? Are you looking for a little bit of pep and performance, or are you looking for, just a very comfortable and soft ride? They'll direct that person to the Buick side of the dealership. So, you know, quite a while, and I have some relatives who are in the industry, and some of them work at, for example, let's take a Lexus store, for example. When some people drive and they test drive the ES, for example, or the GS, or even the IS, some people walk away. They walk out of the door because they don't like the Lexus feel. The Lexus drive is too soft for them. So they walk out the door and they go out and buy a BMW. Mm-hmm. So by having two brands, two luxury brands under one roof, GM would be able to go after BMW and Audi on one hand, and Mercedes and Lexus on the other. What do you think?
That's not a bad strategy, but I think that, let's assume that they did something like that where, you know, you had the luxury GM dealer and then you had the mainstream, everyman's GM dealer, mm-hmm. To handle Chevrolet. What do you do with GMC?
I say you move them to Chevy.
But then, you know, basically people are, you know, is there that much of a difference in the products between GMC and Chevrolet to warrant them to being under the same roof?
I think there could be. I think there are right now with the Acadia and the Terrain. I think so. With the rest of the lineup, no.
Yeah. But, you know, getting back to, you know, Buick and Cadillac side of things, I think that's not a bad idea because, you know, the consumer then knows that, you know, this is the luxury dealership and there's got to be something here for me.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of people don't even know what type of ride they prefer. So, you know, getting back to your point about, you know, these divisions really focusing down on what they are, what they want to be to everybody, and specializing in something, then yeah, you know, if the consumer can get here to this luxury dealership and they try out the entry-level Buick or the entry-level Cadillac and compare the two and see what they like about the two. I don't know on the other side of things how it will work at Chevrolet with the Chevrolet dealerships, if they'll be happy about something like that. Now, it's still something that they're trying to sort out, because I know here, for a lot of the dealerships that they've closed, they're making a one-stop GM dealership across the street. So,
Interesting.
if a Chevrolet dealership had closed down, well, the Pontiac Buick GMC dealership, ended up being an all-brand dealership. So we have a few here that, it's one-stop shop, everything you want, everything GM is right here. So,
Right.
I think for simplicity's sake, I think, GM would love to do something like that. I think they still have too many dealerships out there when you compare them against, the Toyotas and Hondas of the world.
Absolutely. Yeah.
For simplicity's sake, sure, they would love to do something where, all their dealerships can handle all their brands. And so, yeah, you can train the sales force out there to understand the two luxury brands and point the customer to the right vehicle for them, and then, or even try out both vehicles,
Right.
and then maybe have Chevrolet, or even some degree GMC with, the CUV market, if they got something coming up that was. Do they have something that GMC doesn't have, an Equinox type?
They do. That's the terrain.
Oh, that's the Touring. Okay.
Yeah,
Well,
and I think it's a substantially different vehicle. Like, obviously the dimensions are very similar, but in a platform and the mechanicals, but that's why I'm so intrigued by GMC and what's happening there right now, because if we see this kind of, styling using top hats and really doing platform sharing and doing it right instead of, just slapping on and doing some badge engineering work, I think GMC can be a very, very interesting brand. Like I said, it could be very masculine. It could be very, kind of kick your ass-ish, rather than, here's the Equinox. It's very nice. It's very flowy. Maybe some males or some more masculine females wouldn't like that. I don't know if that last part made sense. Masculine females. I don't know what that means.
Well, it's always going to have some sense of masculinity, for the simple fact that, it's been an all truck brand. Right there alone, it kind of tends to lean towards the masculinity. I mean, even the, some of their past slogans were very, very business like, or deal with trades type of thing. With the terrains, like you say, it's a little bit different. It's, I don't consider the terrain to be targeted towards the commercial people.
No, absolutely not. It's for me, the terrain is, if you look at GMC's entire strategy of having, let's say the you have the Sierra in the family, right? That's the construction worker vehicle, so to speak. Maybe he's a foreman or something. And then the terrain is that's the soccer van for the wife of the man who has the GMC Sierra. That's kind of the demographic breakdown that I have in my mind. I don't.
Well, as far as GMC, they've got to, anything that GMC comes out with, has to be, without a doubt, noticeably or marketably different than its Chevrolet counterpart, and no more of this rebadge stuff. And at least when you look at the Buick Cadillacs in the larger world, they are, definitely looking different, driving different, have a different feel to them. It's not, rebadging going on there either. So on the positive side, if they keep that focus, like you state, each brand has a specific niche that they can, if they keep that focus, then yeah, they'll definitely do better. But you know, I like where Buick is with respect to the models that are coming out. They're even considering a luxury compact car, and you know, as for Cadillac, you know, I just, like you say, there's a disconnect there. There's a few disconnects there, because you're not fooling anybody with what they're thinking of coming out with.
Right. Yeah, and the thing that really made me think of my my idea with Cadillac and Buick was, you know, not that, you know, my little point about asking what kind of experience do you want. You know, like you said, some people don't, they don't know what kind of experience they want. They don't know what they really would like. But the problem, if GM applied this strategy of really taking Buick up market and making them the softer version of luxury, you know, making it more and leaning them more in, towards the couch of the luxury car market, rather than the and Cadillac being the rocket, then the if you don't combine the dealerships, what would happen is, let's say someone walks into a Cadillac dealership, they test drive the CTS or the ATS or, you know, whatever, and then they walk out of there saying, you know, they come back to the salesperson saying, you know, this is a little bit too much for me. This is a little bit too harsh, too, you know, it's too sporty. Would you have anything that's not as sporty? And the Cadillac person would say, well, absolutely not. You know, unless you have, you want the $80,000 XTS. So then, you know, the Cadillac person would just send them right out. You know, they don't have any the right product for them. Whereas if you combine the two dealers, you know, if obviously the Cadillac dealer, unless they're really a GM fan and they want to look out for the wellness and the well-being of GM, they wouldn't refer them to a Buick dealer across the street. They would just tell them, okay, well, see you later. Bye-bye. But if we have both the brands and the same sales force working on Cadillac and Buick, then they say, well, if it's too much for you, ma'am, if the ATS here is too stiff or the CTS is a little bit too fast and or maybe even you know, you hear the engine noise too much, maybe you should consider Buick right here. Let's take a ride in this LaCrosse and see how it feels. That's how my whole contention with that started.
Yeah, if you don't get the sale, you know, you get your second opportunity to get it.
Right.
Versus, you know, them just walking out the door.
It's kind of like that that movie with Robert De Niro, with as he's trying to sell cars, he's a mafiosi. He's trying to sell the Audi A8, I think.
I didn't see it.
You didn't see that? He no. says he's a mafia guy, and he, I think it's Analyze This or Analyze That.
Okay.
I don't know which one, but there's a hilarious part in there, and the guy says, he's trying to sell these people a car. He's an ex-mafia cartel guy, and they want to walk away and they want to think about it. And he says, "You want to think about it? I've spent 2 hours with you. I've shown every little nook and cranny of this car to you. What's there to think about? It's either a yes or a no." And he's doing this in his Italian accent, like a you know, like a definite mafiosi. And then the people say, "Well, you know, it's a big decision. Want to think about it?" He says, Get out of my store. As far as I'm concerned, not even customers." And then the customers say, "Well, you know, we'd like to speak to the manager. That's ridiculous." And of course, in his typical De Niro fashion, he says, "You want to speak to the manager? And here's the manager." And he points to his, you know, where area.
Yeah.
that's a typical dealer stereotype.
Yeah.
It's been an excellent conversation, Hilton. What a great conversation. And, you know, I don't think we had much of a debate because we agreed on most of our topics.
Well, I think now, you know, enthusiasts and GM enthusiasts are, you know, we're looking at everything that, you know, all the changes that has happened in the past year. And, you know, you look at Chevrolet and say, you know what, if you sit back and you see where they've gone and where they're going, you look back and you say, you know what, these guys are, they're on the right track, and they're going to be okay. You know, they're focused on, they know what they want to deliver. And you know, everything that's coming out of there is going to be value added. It's going to be economically feasible. It's going to be great gas mileage and high quality.
I'd add to that list world class.
Yes. Well, hopefully all the vehicles at GM will be world class. And that's another little thing we can handle for another show about, is GM, what is GM, is world class only going to be Buick, or are they going to say every one of our vehicles are going to be world class and every one of our vehicles are going to be sold in a market or in the markets where, that particular market segment exists? And that's not the case, especially when you look at, the vehicles that we get versus the vehicles that Australia gets under Holden and the
Yep.
vehicles that England gets under Vauxhall and Europe gets under Opel. I mean, it's just, for me, that's just a big mess, and we can handle that on another show.
Yeah, let's don't even get me started on China because you know what the best part is about China?
That's
In the US we have Buick, and in Europe there's Opel and Vauxhall, which they're very similar vehicles, right? Well, in China there is Chevrolet, there's Cadillac, there's Buick, and then there's also Opel. So that's a whole other mess that they're setting themselves up for disaster. They're the only reason, in my opinion, that GM is doing well in China, and like you said, we'll leave this for another show, but the only reason they're doing well is because the volume is there and the market is growing. If you look at, if you suddenly cut that by just say 15%, GM would be they would be overbranded, and they would have too much fluff hanging off their core values. And that's a topic for another show, and we'll talk about that next time.
And you know what? I understand how, a lot of managers at GM feel. You're talking about Opel and Vauxhall. They've been around for decades, 80 years, and
Centennials.
you can't just say overnight, okay, now you're going to be called Buick, or now you're going to be called Cadillac or Chevrolet, or some of you are going this way, that way.
Right.
How do you manage it? Well, there is a way to manage it, and hopefully that General Motors will be able to understand that and really look at ways of trying to accomplish that. Because at the end of the day, if they could successfully change all those other brands to become, the four core brands that are in North America, they're going to save a pile of money,
Yep.
lots. And the economies of scale there will be enormous. There's
Enormous.
still a lot of things. I mean, there's still a lot of things that GM has to do. Obviously, we're looking at some of the products that are coming out. As I said, Chevrolet's got it going on, Buick, what they're doing, and the stuff that's going to be arriving within the next year or two to our shore, our side of the pond, is great. But as you said, the Cadillac thing, I don't feel as confident about Cadillac right now. And I hopefully the senior management at GM are going to say, you know what, we got to really invest some money into this brand and make each model that comes to market, you bring it out there and you put your name behind it and you say, this is going to be the market leader.
Right.
And especially for Cadillac, every new model that comes out, they have to be willing to put their name on the line and support that model and state, this is going to be a market leader. And if you can't do that, you got the wrong car coming to market.
Yep, exactly. As Arnold Schwarzenegger would say, that would be an
Affirmative.
Exactly.
So that's that. It's funny because we usually have these debates with Manoli, and we argue it back and forth, but for some reason, you and I, we agreed all the way through the show.
Yeah, well, I'm still waiting for my shot at Manoli. Yeah, I know he's a big XTS fan, And I think we love the Converge concept car as well. You know, everything about it. And I think if we had him on this tonight's debate, he would have killed me, because, you know, he is Manoli. So
he is.
I'm looking forward to my round with him.
He would take that MMA style smackdown that he applies in his, I don't know, is it a dojo? I don't know what the proper name is, but he would apply it over the Skype interwebs and throw it your way.
Yep. And so I'm looking forward to a debate with him. So I don't know what it's going to be yet, but I'm sure it'll be entertaining for all the listeners.
Yeah, it surely will. And hopefully we'll be able to get him on. I don't really know what, I think he confused the days of the week today, and he thought today was, well, he thought the show would be tomorrow, but we moved it back to Thursdays and moved it back one day. So we'll work it out with him. We'll have a virtual MMA fight and online. We'll do it through something like Xbox. And whoever wins, that's when the show is going to be, or something like that. I don't know. We'll see. So usually we set up a poll for people to vote about who voted or who won. But I don't think we need to set up a poll today because, there wasn't really that much arguing, that much debating. So let this be a very kind of
maybe how about this? We set up a poll and we just ask the listeners whether they feel that Cadillac is headed in the right direction and have, or whether they don't quite have their act together yet.
Mm-hmm. That would be okay. I can do that. Yeah. That's a great idea. Well, there you go. That's, if you want to vote, if you'd like to vote by the time you're hearing this right now, as you're listening to this either through iTunes or on your computer or in your iPod or on your Zoom, you can go on and log on to debate.gmauthority.com and vote on whether or not you think Cadillac is where it should be or whether it needs some more work. And after you're voted, let us know what you think of the show. Send your opinions, your arguments, and even topics you'd like to see us debate here on the GM Authority Debate. Send those over to podcast@gmauthority.com or tweet us up at GM Authority. That's all one word, GM Authority. And also debate.gmauthority.com is where you can get the show notes for tonight's show and all the other shows. And we'd also be very, 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 very thankful if you left us a review in the iTunes podcast store. If you enjoy the show, we certainly enjoy doing it, and hopefully you also enjoy listening to it. So I think an iTunes review would be very nice. It would help us out quite a bit. So thank you very much, and another debate is in the can. See you later. Please help us out by leaving a rating for this show in the iTunes store. Head on over to iTunes and search for GM Authority Debate.